No, I'm not for sale.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Colts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley, and wow, what a show we got going tonight, guys. We got a couple listeners' questions to get to. We got a fantastic interview, great stuff from Dane Brugler. I mean, this is going to be a great show. But first, obviously, the big news of the day, Jonathan Hankins signs with the Colts 3-year deal, like somewhere between $15 and $16 million, I guess, guaranteed. Look, this is the guy I've been pining for a long time. I know that a lot of people have as well. There's a couple things, though. I mean, it took – how long did this take? I mean, Logan from the Eagles signed. Dontari Poe from the Chiefs signed. He signed with Atlanta. I mean, this is all, like, taken extremely long for young Jonathan Hankins to sign. And, I mean, for a guy – that's not only looking for, like, you know, $10 million per year, he's 25 years old. And this is something that is a little shocking, I think, to a lot of us that took him so long to sign. Like, what was wrong with the guy? What the issue is? Apparently the Colts and Chris Bauer didn't think that the issue, whatever the case may be, was big enough not to sign him. And that's good news for us. We know that Ballard is a thorough dude. We've seen that not only in his rampant free agent spending spree, but, you know, not really a spending spree. I mean, come on, lots of depth guys, special teams guys and stuff like that in there. This is not one of those cases. I mean, we got Simon Sheard, and, you know, if you want to count Spence in there too, I think Spence is going to be a really good player. I think he's underrated right now by the large majority of people that see this free agent class that the Colts pulled in. But Jonathan Hankins is going to be a fantastic addition. After they signed him, I spent probably a better part of an hour and a half putting together game film of all of his 2016 season. I'm going to have that edited here in just a little bit, and I'll have that up on YouTube, on my YouTube page for all of you guys. It's like 12 and a half minutes long. The first probably 5-6 minutes of it was just about everything that I saw him doing as far as, taking up multiple blockers and stuff like that, allowing the linebackers to get through so that you guys could kind of see what he's going to do for the defense in our system and in the Colts scheme. And then the rest of the time, probably the second half of it, all I did was just go through and put nothing but Hankins tackles, anything he was directly involved in, the tackle or the stop or the sack or just whatever. So it's a good 12 minutes long. It's a good, you know, nice little video for you guys to check it out. And if I can get that done and edited by the end of, well, which is tonight, Thursday night, which you guys will be listening to this Friday, then I'll have it in the show notes. And if not, I'll put the link in there the best I can as soon as I get a chance to get around to it. But this is a fantastic signing for the Colts. One of the things that I noticed a lot with watching his 2016 season is that because of them signing Damon Harrison, the Giants, that is, he was primarily the nose tackle in their scheme, in their system. And that forced Jonathan Hankins out to like a three tech. Typically, he did fill in when Damon was out, or they'd do their rotation up front or something like that. He would also start at somewhere around like a two tech, be inside shoulder of the guard, and then would move over into a nose tackle or a one tech or something like that. And sometimes, you know, he would be the nose. But a lot of the time, a lot of his snaps were from the three technique position, and a lot of his form and a lot of his technique is that of a nose tackle, of a true zero tech, like we were talking about with Charles McDonald the other night. He takes up blockers for the Colts two-gap scheme. He is going to take up a ton of blockers, but he also can shed those blockers a lot once he sees. And one of the things that I really liked about watching him play was how effortlessly a lot of it comes to him. He is a man. I can't say that I saw a ton of times where he was bullied or anything like that. Maybe a couple, nothing. I mean, this is going to be a huge addition, guys. I mean, I am so stoked for him, and I really hope that the Colts can keep T.Y. McGill on the roster, because those two up front, I mean, that is, to me, that's exciting. Not just Jonathan Hankins coming in, but he and T.Y. McGill running that inside there with Henry Anderson as a defensive end. Guys, this defensive line just got a lot better, a lot better. This is a significant move for the Colts. I mean, there are so many possibilities that this opens up right now. Not only does it make a big difference in the Colts' already existing defense, but with the draft coming up. And, you know, a lot of people pointed this out to me. They thought that this opened up the possibility for a first-round running back. I think that the possibility was already there. I mean, to be quite honest with you, I don't see it happening still. However, it opens up everything. It opens up everything for the draft. I mean, the draft now is completely wide open. The gates are open for any position at any time. This does not force the Colts to try to find one of the very few slim pickings nose tackle, true nose tackles, at least, out of this class. They can focus on just adding depth to that defensive line now, whether it's a three-tech guy or a guy who can move in, someone who's a little versatile. If the Colts were to nab somebody like Chris Wormley right now, possibly even Malik McDowell, man, this defensive line could be considered one of the best and most improved, drastically most improved, in the offseason. I don't think that's a stretch. In fact, I almost feel like that would be most definitely true. Now, when you think about what that does for their edge guys, you know, in fact, when I was watching one of the sacks that Jonathan Hankins pulled in, he didn't pull in a bunch of sacks, guys. He's not a guy who's going to get into the quarterback a ton. He legit is a lineman eater, and he is, I mean, eventually sometimes he's going to get after the quarterback. It just is not something that's necessarily part of his repertoire, okay? But one of his sacks came with him from the five tech. I mean, he was outside. He rushed the passer and just completely bulldozed his assignment. It was fantastic. I mean, guys, this dude has a ton of power, a ton of strength. Nobody can move him off his spot more than once. You know what I mean? You watch him and his feet are glued to this turf. I mean, he is not going anywhere. He's got a hand free. He's forcing running backs to cut around him. He is deadly with, you know, clogging the cutback lanes. It's a great signing. We have nothing but excitement about this, guys. This is fantastic. Like I said, I am stoked right now with this going forward. Not only is this a good thing for just the existing defensive line, like I said, but this defense in general, front seven-wise, could be so much better than anything we've seen in the past 5 years from the Indianapolis Colts. So lots of good things coming, lots of excitement. Let's get hyped for this, because this is a great move. So without further ado, like I said, we've got Dane going to be on here in just a little bit. So let's get to our listener questions.
Hey, Matt. My name is Jordan. I'm from Fort Wayne. And a question I have for you is, obviously we don't know who are going to be picked at the different draft picks, but I was just wondering, how many guys do you think are going to be day one immediate impact? Thanks for doing the pod. Love it.
Thank you, Jordan, for the call. Good question. I mean, we don't know who the Colts are going to pick up right now. I mean, this is something that, you know, obviously, you know, the draft hasn't come yet, so we're not sure what's going to happen. But, I mean, when we look at the way that the things are starting to pan out, I think that we legit have a reason to believe that at least the first two and possibly the first three draft picks, depending, of course, what happens. If they trade back and trade back again, you know, we really don't know, because we don't know how many picks they're going to get in the first 2 days in that type of scenario, maybe two. But either way, at the minimum, in the first 2 days, they should have at least two day one starters, plug and play guys. That's what they need to be hunting for right now. And if the Colts do end up taking three draft picks in the first three rounds, then I think that you've got to, I think it's reasonable to expect them to have three plug and play guys. Ballard's not going to be hunting for projects in this in the first few rounds. This is something that he wants to put his mark on right now. You can tell by that with his free agent situation, the way he's brought these guys in. He's brought in great foundational guys. He's brought in a fantastic nose tackle now with Hankins, and he's brought in a lot of depth, just guys who are going to fight for this roster spot. Whether they get it or not, they're going to fight. And they all want their second chance, especially guys like Margus Hunt and Barkevious Mingo. Not two guys who are expected to do much, but two guys who are going to come into that field this summer and are going to fight for a roster spot. Now, when we get to the draft, I mean, he's got to be going after guys who are going to start. Not guys that are going to start by default, but guys who should start. I mean, they have a ton of options in the first few rounds as far as for guys who can really stand out, who can really make a difference. I totally expect them to get a corner and an edge at least out of this first three rounds. And I would say you possibly another defensive lineman. I mean, I really think they're going to focus defense on this. And then I think on day three, they're going to go to the running back. That's my assumption. And that would be, to me, a good way to go. I personally am for cornerback as early as possible when they get the opportunity, because I think that's one of the most glaring needs. I think Rashawn Melvin's a good backup. I think he's going to be a good possible nickel guy. I think he's probably a little better in the nickel than he is on the outside. But either way, if they go after a guy, even someone like Jordan Lewis out of Michigan or something like that in the second round or something like that, I know he comes with issues, but he'd be a great nickel guy. And then they could put Rashawn Melvin outside, and that would be a good addition as well. I mean, that would be a good starting point. Let's put it that way. I totally expect them to double dip on cornerbacks. I mean, I don't expect them to go with Rashawn Melvin as one of their top three corners. I just don't expect that to happen. I mean, let me put it this way. In the first 2 days of the draft, every draft pick that they have in the first 2 days of the draft should be plug and play, whether that's two or three or whatever the case may be. But thank you, Jordan, for the question. Excellent question. And I think that that's totally reasonable for us to expect. Now let's go to our next call.
Hey, Matt, it's Kiefer from Miami, Florida. This is more of a scenario, but I was thinking back because I really like the idea of the Colts trading back. Possibility it could be with the Kansas City Chiefs due to Ballard's connections with Dorsey. And the idea, if we trade back by then, chances are Gerrion Conley probably won't be there. But we probably could get Dory Jackson, Kevin King, maybe McKinley, you know, stuff like that. Maybe even Jared Davis. You know, that's like a 27th. I think they'll still be there. And maybe we'll squeeze like an extra second or third round pick, which in the second round, I think we'd go for Joe Mixon. And third round, we'd probably go again for Sidney Jones. Also, I'm pretty big on Malik McDowell. I think I wouldn't really mind him like being our if Foster isn't there at 15, and if the potential to trade back isn't there, I think we could still go for Malik McDowell. That kid's a monster, man. Kid changes the game. Even though he had the type of clowny way to end his college season, you know, where Clowney kind of stopped playing for them. I don't think that's gonna be a problem for Malik, because I think for him it was like 2 years of going about to go to the bowl games. And then his senior year, the whole team just exploded on him. And basically, he was demoralized. So I don't really blame him for that. So I think he's worth the risk. You know, I just wanted your opinion on that. And lots of props to the show, man. Really great show. Love hearing it all the time, man. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Great points here. Great points. Trading back with the Chiefs, they're sitting at 27 right now. That's a long way to trade back, but that's exactly how the Colts will end up getting a lot of capital back for that trade. You know, maybe the Chiefs are wanting to come up for one of these quarterbacks. That would be perfect for the Colts, because if you're coming up for a quarterback, not only are they going to get that capital. I mean, you're going to be trading back 12 spots. That's significant. That's going to warrant at least a third round pick in return as well. And I think that when you look at the possibility for them going for a quarterback to replace Alex Smith here in the next couple years, I think it's more than feasible. I mean, I think that's very possible. That's a good idea. I mean, as far as finding that trade partner, we don't really know. I mean, and you know, hit it on the head there with the connection there between him and Ballard. And that makes sense. Would that happen? We don't know. But, you know, if that's the case, I don't want Bauer to be pulling any punches. Take him for what you can get, Chris, because we want as much as we can get. Now, Adoree Jackson, I'll be honest with you. He's a guy who's got wicked speed, a lot of really good pieces to him. But I have not watched a ton of tape on him, so I can't really comment on him. But if they were to do it, I mean, like you hit my little sweet spot there with Jared Davis as well. A big fan of him. There's a ton of options is the point. And if they do that, man, they can get just about anybody they want. They can load up on corners in that regard. That would be a very smart strategy as far as I'm concerned. Second round getting Mixon, you know, I'm not convinced that Mixon's on their board. If he is, look, Indianapolis is going to have to get used to this stuff, and I think that it's going to be easy for a lot of Colts fans to try to smooth it over. With his successes with troubled players in the past, Indianapolis Colts fans are going to be, you know, very eager to say, all right, Chris, we're giving you the benefit of the doubt. Let's hope this guy is not a total jackass, because if he is, then it's going to look terrible. Second round, not as much of a risk as far as money. But the fact is, that's a second round pick. Those can't just be thrown out the window. Not in your first year. I don't look for that to happen as far as Mixon. But there's a lot of good running backs. I like Sidney Jones as well. I know that, you know, we get into some of these guys who have been injured and whatnot. But, you know, that's he been considered the top corner in the class by a lot of guys, or the top two or three. Grab him. Make sure you get you a corner early, and then, you know, get a guy like him. If you can steal him at that point in the round, I don't have a problem with that, especially if you're getting another couple of draft picks for a first round trade. So as far as Malik McDowell goes, I understand the way you think. He is a monster. I mean, he absolutely is. You're right. And he does change the game when he's on point. I've just always been impartial away from guys that just throw in the towel. And maybe I shouldn't be, but I think that because there's just so much unknown there. You just don't know what their love for the game is. What is it, just because they weren't playing well? I mean, look, I've been on teams where we gotten our butts handed to us for half the season, but I played my butt off the entire time, and I think that most of the people on my team did as well. We just sucked, you know. When you look at the other side of that, you know, the guys that didn't do that, I didn't want them on my team. I didn't care if they're my best friends or not. I didn't want anything to do with them. And I've always kind of had that mentality with just about anything, whether it was basketball, playing or football, or, you know, just anything. I never wanted guys like that on my team. I never wanted crybabies, and I never wanted people that didn't care. And that's what scares me about him. His upside is ridiculous. But other than that, you know, I don't know. I've not been the one to be able to investigate him as much. I'm hoping that Ballard, if he does take him, that he's got, you know, him completely cleared off the board, and it'll be a great story for later if it all works out. But his upside is sick. So, yeah, I agree with you there. Thank you, guys. That's the two call-ins we've got for today. Make sure you guys are calling in 574-516-2881 if you guys want to be eligible for these draft guides. I mean, I love getting your guys' calls. We're going to continue to do them anyways throughout. I love doing this. This is great. It's great for the show. You guys get to hear your voice on the podcast. It works out for everybody. And you guys are going to be eligible, like I said, for these draft guides that are fantastic. So Monday will be the last day that we take calls for the draft guides. I will be handing them out on Tuesday's show, and I will be getting a hold of those winners, and then we'll be forwarding you on to Inside the Pylon or Indie T Scouting, depending on which one you've won. And that's when it is. So you guys got a few days. I mean, if we got to put 10 calls on the next show, so be it. But if you want to call in, call in. Now's your chance. You've got until Monday, and I'm going to give you until Monday at 6 o'clock Eastern time. If it comes after 6 o'clock Eastern time, you're just a call-in. Before 6 o'clock Eastern time on Monday, that's your cutoff time, and then we're going to hand out those on Tuesday's show. So thank you guys for calling in, those of you that have. It's a lot of fun. But let's move on to Dane now. And I'd like to welcome Dane Brugler to the show today. Dane, thank you for joining me today.
Well, of course. Appreciate having me on.
Dane is the NFL analyst the draft analyst for NFL Draft Scout and CBS Sports. Dane, we've got a lot of questions for you today, and we'll try to knock this off somewhat in a quick manner here, but Dalvin Cook is your number one running back. What is it? I mean, aside from, you know, he had his poor testing at the combine and some other issues, you know, going on pre-draft, but what about Dalvin Cook as far as on film that you see that you don't see in some guys like maybe Fournette or McCaffrey?
When you study Dalvin Cook, you know, you mentioned it, how the testing wasn't ideal. Kind of surprising how poorly he tested at the combine, and the fact that he didn't look to retest at the pro day in terms of the jumps, the short shuttle, the cone drills, tells you that, you know, he didn't have any better results during the, when he practiced those. So that is a concern. But with Dalvin Cook, I'm trusting the tape because the tape is that impressive. And when you evaluate the running back position, I think there are two main criteria that you're looking for that really translates to the pro level. Can you navigate and can you create? And I think Dalvin Cook is above average in both those areas. You know, I don't care what the testing numbers say. He plays explosive on the field. And now he's not without his issues. The biggest issues for me, the fumbles. He had 12 fumbles over his career, including 6 last season. Pass pro, he's limited just because he's 210 pounds. You know, he'll effort's not a question, but he just doesn't have the base strength, the core strength to hold up consistently. You know, blocking, whether it's you know, edge rushers, blitzers, and then especially 300-pound interior linemen. So it's something that you know, it could impact where he goes, depending on how the team that is looking for a running back is going to use him. But with the ball in his hands and as a receiver, I think he has some special qualities. His ability to string together runs and make guys miss in a phone booth, I mean, he can do that. He, you know, was at his best on those outside zone stretch runs where he had a chance to, you know, kind of set up the blocks, hit daylight, and then explode to the second level. So with Dalvin Cook, the balance, the feet, the spatial awareness, what he can do as both a rusher and a receiver, for me, that's why he is the top back this year. You know, the character has to check out. The medicals have to check out. So as long as those two areas are good, I would draft him as the first running back this year.
So it's fair to say when you have a guy like Fournette, who is more of an in-between the tackles type runner, hasn't had a whole lot of experience, at least a lot of experience in the passing game. But then you look at a guy like McCaffrey, who's not necessarily, I mean, he can be, some people, it goes back and forth. People think that he's an in-between the tackles type guy. Other people don't. I don't necessarily think that he is at the next level, but he had such a dynamic in the passing game. So do you, I mean, I guess, is it fair to say that you think Dalvin Cook is somewhat of the best possible mixture of the two in that regard?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And, you know, with Christian McCaffrey, I guess I'm one of the few that has Leonard Fournette as my third running back. I have Dalvin Cook 1, Christian McCaffrey 2, Fournette 3. And, you know, with McCaffrey, I think he can be a featured back. You just have to kind of tweak your opinion or your definition of what a featured back is. He's not going to carry the ball 25 times a game and be a workhorse. But he can touch the ball 20 to 25 times a game, whether that's 15 carries and, you know, 7, 8, 9 targets out of the backfield, whatever that ends up being. McCaffrey, the moment you add him to your team, he might be your best route runner. He's that special out in the slot, out wide. So, you know, I think that dynamic versatility, keep him in the backfield, motion him out, that's going to stress out a defense because you have to account for Christian McCaffrey on every single play. And I think that's why that's part of the package that makes Christian McCaffrey so appealing. And then with Leonard Fournette, he's a physical freak. And I like Fournette. I see him more as a mid-first rounder, not a top 10 pick like so many other people do. When you evaluate the running back position, you know, we can talk about being, you know, the freakish qualities just from an athleticism standpoint, from a size, power standpoint. But I would argue that vision, patience, run tempo, those are more important for a running back in the NFL than just being bigger, faster, stronger. And that's really what Leonard Fournette has been able to get by on in his entire life, you know, because he's always been bigger, faster, stronger. But in the NFL, you just need a little more nuance. You need a little more, and I think those areas, that's where Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey, that's where those guys are just better, far superior than Fournette at this point. With the vision, setting up those blocks, you know, when you watch Fournette on film, his best plays, his best runs were with gaping holes. And then when the holes weren't there, that's where you saw him struggle a little bit, where he had to try to create for himself. So, you know, I like Fournette. I just don't love him as other people do. But it is an interesting dynamic with these three running backs in the first round. And it'll be interesting to see where they end up. And then moving forward, how we look back at this class a couple years from now.
Yeah, I'm excited about this class just in general. Those top three, I think that obviously a lot of people have Mixon in the as far as total ability anyways, have him up there as well. So it'll be interesting to see what goes on with these guys. Hassan Reddick, you've mocked to the Colts at 15 in your last two mocks. What is it about him that you see fitting the Indianapolis Colts defense so cleanly?
It's the fact that he can do anything. He's been one of my favorite players for a while now. I loved him when I saw him in the fall. And then at the Senior Bowl, that kind of showed his versatility, because at Temple, he was more of a edge rusher where, you know, he would occasionally put his hand on the ground. He'd stand up. They just asked him to do a lot of different things because he was kind of in that tweener mold, you know, 6'1.5", 230 pounds. But at the Senior Bowl, they stood him up as an off-ball linebacker, and watching him cover running backs out of the backfield or tight ends, he just made it look so easy because of his athleticism. And so I think he can play inside backer, play outside. You could put him, you know, kick him down and let him be a nickel rusher. You just have so many options with a player like Hassan Reddick that I think in that mid-first round, if he's on the board, I think he would make a lot of sense for whatever scheme you're running. I think he'd be a defensive playmaker, the type of guy that you add your defense, build around him, type of playmaker that I think would be ideal for Chris Ballard and his first draft as the GM of the Colts.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of him as well, especially since, you know, he started kind of creeping out. I think it was a little bit before the Senior Bowl, but especially at the Senior Bowl. As far as like his weight and stuff like that, I mean, he's gained a little bit of weight over the last several weeks and months, mm-hmm. but is there something like, is there a limitation you think that he should put on his weight for, the position? As far as I think I've also heard a lot of people, like you said, not only just the versatility to move outside, but I think a lot of people are actually projecting him as an edge as well. But I mean, twice as many are projecting him as an inside linebacker as a Mike. Is his weight fluctuation in any way going to change where, not so much where he goes, but where people project him? And is there, do you think there's a better case scenario for him to kind of remain where he's at, just at about 240, a slightly less than that, or maybe kind of beefing up a little bit to around 245?
Yeah, and, you know, he's a former safety defensive back, walk-on. So, I mean, he doesn't have, like, that ideal frame that you want in an edge player. And, you know, I think some teams will look at him differently than others, but depending on 3-4, 4-3, you know, their base and sub packages, you know, it will just vary team to team in terms of how they ultimately view him, long term and, you know, the bulk of his snaps. But I like him best as an off ball linebacker, probably best inside. And then I want to use him as a blitzer because he has that pass rush ability. You know, 22.5 tackles for loss, 10.5 sacks last year. And at 6'1.5", 237 pounds, I don't know if he'll ever really be comfortable carrying 240 to 245. I think he's probably best right now where he's at, just around the 235, 240 mark, you know, in between there. So I'm not sure, you know, as a full-time edge rusher, you know, maybe in a 3-4, he could potentially do that. But I think his value is best as an off-ball linebacker. Let him play in coverage. Let him blitz from different angles. I think you can do different things with him, and I think that overall versatility is really what makes him so appealing.
I agree. Another guy that I really like, you've got mocked actually to Miami the past two mocks that you've done. Tyus Bowser at 22 is 15 for him a drastic reach?
Yeah, you know, I don't think he's a 15 best player. I guess I'll put it that way. With Tyus Bowser, he's a ridiculous athlete for that size. I think you just have to – you need a plan for a Tyus Bowser. 6'2.5", 247 pounds. I think he fits more of the mold of an edge rusher than a Hassan Reddick. You know, he's bigger, and I think he has just more of that profile. So I think he fits more of an edge prospect. And, you know, pass rush, every team needs more pass rush. And if you really believe in a pass rush, a pass rusher, then there's really you can't take him too early. And with Bowser, the way he tested 4.65 40 yard dash, a 1.59 10 yard split, outstanding explosion numbers, in the vertical and the jumps. So, you know, Bowser, the way he was used at Houston, he was an outside linebacker in their 3-4. But they relied on a lot of interior pressure with Ed Oliver and their blitzing inside linebackers to kind of filter runs to the outside. So Tyus Bowser wasn't asked to consistently rush off the edge. And I have some questions. I've had teams tell me that, you know, when they put him on the whiteboard, there are some questions, you know, just with his, football awareness, and not that he can't do it. He just lacks seasoning, lacks experience. So I think that as a rookie, Tyus Bowser is more of a nickel rusher. Not sure he's a full, every down type of player, but I think you project him to be that down the road, maybe by year two. So I project Tyus Bowser as more of a second rounder, personally, but I think he's going to come off the board. I think there's a good chance he's going to crash the first round, because when you're built like that and you have that type of athleticism and you can rush the passer, you just don't last very long. So I think there's a good chance Tyus Bowser ends up in the first round. I think 15 would be a little rich for him at that point. But again, when you can rush the passer and you have a high ceiling like Bowser does, it's never really too early to take a chance on one of those guys.
Yeah, he was really interesting to me. Like you said, they relied on a lot of that interior pressure, so they were able to drop him in coverage, a ton.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I was surprised about him was his ability to get in and take on some of that interior offensive line, though. I didn't expect that as much, and kind of the limited tape that I saw of him, cut-ups for the most part, not necessarily full games, but I was kind of impressed with that. Now, how many times he got stopped and stalled, trying to do that, I don't know, but I did like the way he was able to get himself skinny against the interior linemen. So
he has the arm length, I think, that you see it on tape where he's able to extend, lock out, protect himself, keep himself clean from block. I think he's just looking at his I was at the Senior Bowl, I saw him during the weigh-ins. He looks like a bodybuilder. He's got developed muscle tone, throughout. I mean, you can tell he puts in the time in the weight room. And I think that weight room strength translates to on-field strength. Now, obviously, going up against, blockers in the AAC compared to what he'll see in the NFL is a big jump. And that's part of the reason why I think Bowser's more of a nickel player, a sub-package guy, a rookie, not a full-time starter. But I do think, again, that's why he's going to end up in the first round, or a good chance he will, is because the potential is there. Use the skill set, the traits to develop into that type of player.
Greg Cosell said the other day that he projected Solomon Thomas as a more of a natural three tech. Do you agree or you disagree with that?
I don't disagree, because I definitely understand it. It's what he brings from the interior with his powerful hands and his initial quickness. He's able to just embarrass offensive guards. If he has a little bit of space to work with and he's matched up one-on-one with an offensive guard, I'll take Solomon Thomas every time. I think we kind of went through this a couple years ago with Aaron Donald, who, was too undersized, and he wouldn't have the size to match up. He's one of the best interior defensive players in the NFL, if not, just in general, one of the best defensive players. But with Solomon Thomas, he's not 290. He's 15 pounds less than Aaron Donald was. He's about 275. So I think that, can he hold up as an every down three technique? I'm not necessarily buying that, but I think as a base end, he can bring some juice off the edge, and then you kick him inside. I think the fact that he can play both, use him like Seattle uses a Michael Bennett, or, one of those guys where he can play both positions. You don't want to limit him to just one spot. I think that versatility is key with Thomas, and a big reason why, he's viewed as a top five, top six pick. And with Solomon Thomas, I think you also factor in just the versatility, the intelligence. The fact is, a third-year sophomore, still very young. I think he's going to continue to get better and better. Listen to Coach Shaw talk about Solomon Thomas. He calls him the complete player. Just what he brings from a mental standpoint, obviously from a physical standpoint, he's very technically sound. And then just from a leadership perspective, he's a very safe prospect. And I think that's why he's in play at number two for the 49ers, who are starting off their new regime. It's a high floor player. I think you have a good idea of what you're going to get. As long as you have a plan for how you're going to use him, whether it's inside or outside, or preferably both, I think he's definitely worth a high pick in this draft.
Yeah, interesting, because I've seen he's been a guy that's fluctuated quite a bit, just in mocks. But, it's always interesting to try to figure out where teams see him. But another guy that you're high on and that I am falling in love with the more I watch him is Jared Davis out of Florida, the inside linebacker. a three down guy who can play against the run, has some that much pop behind his pads, but can also cover. He's a leader of work ethic. When you look at him versus a guy like Reuben Foster that is so natural as well, right now I think it's obvious to say that Reuben is the better prospect at this moment. But if you were to do a three-year projection as far as what you're seeing on tape with these guys, do you think that gap closes quite a bit, or is there a possibility that you think Jared Davis could actually end up being the better inside linebacker of the two?
Yeah, I don't think there's a big gap right now. I like Reuben Foster quite a bit, but I love Jared Davis, and I think they're both first-round picks. The big thing with Davis is just, can he stay healthy? He plays, and really I have that same concern with Foster, because both these players are so violent. They both play with passion. I mean, there's not a passive bone in their body. They're just very passionate with the way they play the game, contact-driven mentality. And so with Jared Davis, you have a player who's explosive. I think he's very football smart. The trademark toughness it shows. And so, you know, it's something that with linebackers, I mean, you want them to play like every play is their last. But with Jared Davis, you know, he's had several injuries that have, you know, probably come as a result of that violent, you know, just the way that play style, that it makes him so productive. But can he also hold up for a 16-game schedule with the way he plays the game? He had a torn meniscus in his left knee as a junior or as a sophomore, and then his past year as a senior, he had a badly sprained left ankle that really forced him to miss the final month and a half of the season, forced him to miss the Senior Bowl, the combine, and it's the same ankle that he previously broke in high school. So there's a lot of question marks about the durability. And I have the same questions with Foster just because of the way they play the game. They don't know how to go half speed. It's just not in their nature, which is great. That's what you want in a linebacker. But again, you know, the greatest predictor of future injuries is past injuries. And so I think the durability factor is something that weighs on the Jared Davis selection, whether or not you take him in the late first round or not. But based on talent, based on ability, absolutely, I think Jared Davis is worth a first-round pick. I don't think there's a huge gap between him and Reuben Foster.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I think something that gets passed up a little bit is that Foster has a past with concussions as well. Like you said, that violent play style. And that's something, all this is going to be obviously taken into effect, but they're both definitely first-round talents, in my opinion. And I just, I don't know, maybe it's the listening to Jared Davis talk and then seeing his game film, you know, just, man, I just can't help but think that he might overtake that, you know, eventually in a couple years or whatever.
I don't think you can rule that out. I think that's definitely a fair assessment. And, yeah, you're right with Foster. He's had a concussion, multiple shoulder stingers. I mean, he missed the combine. He hasn't been able to work out to this point because he just underwent rotator cuff surgery. So it is definitely a concern with both these players.
Yeah, it's too bad, too, because they're both really impressive. And you see that violent play style. And that's ultimately what you want in football. You know, everybody loves that type of stuff. But at the same time, like you said, teams are going to have to weigh the durability factor for both of them. But I don't think there's any possibility that either of them, to be quite honest with you, doesn't go in the top in the first round. Who in your top 10 of your recent mock do you see as most likely to maybe slip to the 15 to 20 range?
That's a good question. You know, I mean, mocks are tough because they're basically, you know, what I'm hearing based off of what I think. But based on my latest mock, you know, I think that the top seven to me are top seven. I feel pretty good are going to go in the top seven, not necessarily in that order, but I feel pretty good are going to go in the top 10. And that's, you know, Miles Garrett, Solomon Thomas, Jamal Adams, Malik Cooker, Marshawn Lattimore, Jonathan Allen, and then I think Mitchell Trubisky, the quarterback, will be in the top 10 somewhere. So those seven players, I feel pretty good, will be that high. Mm-hmm. And then the next three players in my top 10 right now are Leonard Fournette, Derek Barnett, and Corey Davis. So it seems to me that, you know, even though I don't think Fournette's the top 10 pick, there's a good chance he ends up in the top 10, whether it could be Jacksonville at 4, Carolina 8, Cincinnati 9. And so that leaves Barnett and Corey Davis. I think either of those two players could slip to the teens. You know, Derek Barnett has not had a great pre-draft process. You know, that The resume is awesome. As a 3-year starter at Tennessee, double-digit sacks each season. He's been a model of consistency the last 3 years as a pass rusher, but he's not that. He doesn't have the testing numbers ideally that you want in a pass rusher in the top 15. It's just not how he wins. He's not an explosive guy, but he can bend a little bit. He's very smart, very savvy, understands how to beat blocks, very well-rounded versus a run in the pass. That's why I do think Derek Barnett is deserving of top 10 consideration, but he won't be for everybody. And so for that those reasons, he could be available in the teens. And then with Corey Davis, similar. He hasn't had the pre-draft process that you want from a potential top 10 pick. He hasn't been able to work out. He bypassed the Senior Bowl, and then he injured his ankle during training. He missed the combine, missed the pro day. He's hopeful he can work out before the draft, but you know, here we are 2 weeks out, time's running out. So, Corey Davis, there's still a chance he could be a top 10 pick, a top 15 pick. But you know, teams might get a little bit of cold feet if he isn't able to work out, and that ankle injury is something that teams worry about. So both Derek Barnett and Corey Davis, I could definitely see falling into the teens. And I think, you know, a team could end up getting excellent value for those two players.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's never fun to like project failure or anything like that, but it's I'm interested to just get your thoughts on this. Some of these troubled top end players like Malik McDowell, and I say troubled because of, you know, work ethic questions and so on, but you've got other issues with Tim Williams, Mix, and so on and so forth. A lot of these guys, who would be the guy that you think would be most likely to fall to basically their own demise and just work themselves out of an NFL job?
Yeah, and I think it's important to, you know, we don't paint a broad brush, you know, just with the character guys. Each one has their own individual set of challenges and issues. And it can be tough because you're basically trying to, you got to predict the future. And it's something right. that, you know, there's for every, guy that, you know, Josh Gordon, who hasn't been able to get out of his own way, there's a Tyrann Mathieu, who's a success story, who had plenty of issues in college, but is able to turn it around. So, it can be tough when you're trying to predict how, you know, 20, 21 year old, young adults will mature and how they'll react to NFL life. But with that said, Tim Williams really worries me. On the field, yeah, he's a first-round talent with his ability to rush the passer, but just based on the type of crowd he hangs around with, how important football is compared to his off-field activities, whether it's weed, whether it's hanging out with a certain group, it's something that I'm not sure will change at the NFL level. I think there's a very likely scenario where we see Tim Williams fall to the third round. I think that's very possible. I think you also factor in that he just wasn't a full-time player at Alabama. I mean, he had two career starts. I mean, he was a sub-package player for that team. So it's something that there are plenty of concerns there, and I think that could end up falling or causing him to fall. And, hopefully he's able to keep on the straight and narrow and develop into a productive pass rusher, but there's certainly smoke there. And so when there's smoke, there's always a possibility of something, it not working out for the long term.
Absolutely. Now on the other side of that, like kind of the guys that are suffering from injuries, whether it's Allen or, even Foster with concussions and the shoulder stuff as well, Tack McKinley, just some of those guys that are coming in here with injuries. Who's one of the guys that you see? It's just as far as what you know about their type of injuries. Who's the one guy that you see coming out of this clean? It's a surgery. It's basically going to be in their past.
I think Corey Davis. We mentioned him with the ankle. He was healthy his entire career at Western Michigan, so there weren't any big issues there. Hopefully this is just more of a bump in the road for him, and I don't really see injuries being an issue for him long term. Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin, all indications that hip injury is just an issue that once it's healed will be fine. The medical rechecks are going on right now in Indianapolis, and so eager to get some of the feedback on those. John Ross, I'm really interested in. He's a wild card. You could make an argument he's worth a top 10 pick, but he could also fall out of the top 25 just based on the medicals. There's a lot of intrigue there. Injuries. He's had past surgeries on both knees. He's just coming off the shoulder surgery. And at that size, you know, do you really trust him going over the middle in the NFL? It's something that teams will have to ask themselves and weigh that value with a player like John Ross, who's so much fun to watch. I mean, I put him on my team right now, and I'll feel good about my chances. But, you know, at what point, you know, what's his value in the draft because of the injury concerns? So John Ross is, to me, one of the most important, you know, medical rechecks that we have going on right now.
Get you one more question before we get you out of here. Now, we kind of talked about three-year projections with Davis and Reuben Foster, but is there a guy in this class that maybe a second-round pick, you know, possibly even, or, you know, a second-round projection at least, or a third, possibly early third, that you see who could, like, let's say we did that three-year projection and did a redraft in 2 to 3 years. Who's that one guy that you think could possibly and would possibly be redrafted in the top half of the first round? Is there anybody like that in this draft for you?
Yeah, I think there definitely could be a few of those guys. I'm a big fan of Adam Shaheen from Ashland, the tight end. He's been my guy for a while. I really think that he can be a big time player in this league. It might take a year or two, but eager to see his progression when we look back 3 years from now, what he can be. I think Curtis Samuel from Ohio State. For the team that doesn't get Christian McCaffrey in the first round. I think Curtis Samuel in the second round, if he's available. I mean, he's a first round player, but he might be available in the second round for them. That versatile skill set, I think he could be, kind of in that mold, that type of player. And then a guy on defense, Josh Jones, the safety from NC State. I think he has a chance to be a big time player as a safety, with his size, his athleticism. I think when we look back 3 years from now, I think Josh Jones could be one of those guys where we kind of wonder, how'd he fall, so far, out of the top 40 or wherever he ends up going. He could be a guy that outplays his draft slot.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. I came across DJ down there in Indianapolis during the combine. And that was one of the guys I was talking to him about, I was asking him about a guy that's not kind of on the scene right now that he's projecting to really make a name for himself over the next couple months. And that was exactly who he told me. And, you know, it's funny because in the last month, a lot of people are, his name's coming up a lot more. That people are just now seeing him, but he's definitely getting the pub that he said that he would. So I thought that was interesting that you brought him up as well. But Dane, thank you so much for joining me today. This was absolutely fantastic. A lot of very good information. It's going to be a super exciting draft. I'm sure you're just as much looking forward to it as the rest of us are. It's just a total talent-filled draft, and I don't know that we've seen one like this in the past decade or so.
Yeah, it's going to be fun for sure. And there's, a lot of intrigue about who's going to go where, like there always is, but especially this year. So that makes draft day even that more exciting when we don't know what's going to happen. So that's what makes the NFL draft as popular as it is. So, yeah, can't wait.
Absolutely. You guys can follow Dane at DP Brugler on Twitter. Thank you, Dane, again for joining us. Thank you guys for listening. And make sure you guys are following myself, MDanely_NFL on Twitter. And make sure you guys are getting out there to iTunes, rating and reviewing the show. Keep listening. Keep calling in. I'll get your voicemails on the air every time I get them. So thank you guys for listening, and I'll catch you all next week right here on Locked On Colts.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily podcast on the Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.